The Map, Arizona's first congressional district.
The Players, six candidates battling it out in a Democratic primary, all vying for their shot against longtime Republican incumbent David Schweikert.
It's a highly targeted toss-up seat that could determine which party will control the House.
I'm Anita Malik.
And I'm Steve Goldstein. And this is Who's the One? Thanks for listening to this second edition of the Who's the One podcast. In this one, Anita and I will be doing things a little bit differently than our first episode, which if you have not heard it, please go find it on Apple or Spotify or wherever you find your podcasts. It explains why we're doing this. Also features a really interesting conversation with Jacob Rabashkin about where Arizona's first congressional district fits into the scope of all the races across the country. But as I mentioned, this one's a little bit different. Anita took the initiative and went out and talked to real voters and volunteers and folks who really care about this Democratic primary and what's going on in CD1. And we'll give you a chance to hear from some of those voters, and we'll get Anita's perspective as well on what folks had to say and where we are as far as the calendar is concerned for this primary, as the primary election in Arizona, at this point, only about 4 months away. But Anita, before we actually hear from any of the voters, it's a real random sample based on a couple of places you were. I want to get your expectations going in, because we're already in March, and these are folks who are obviously are interested enough. They're attending events. They're going to protests. Tell me about your expectations. Were you thinking, okay, this is going to be a real knowledgeable group of folks, or something else? And what did you find?
I expected a little bit of both, to be honest with you. And I think that's what we'll talk about what I found, but both because I am still involved, and you know, people that are very involved in what's happening at the local level, maybe their PCs in their precinct, those people that I'm around seem to have a pretty good sense. And some of them have already chosen who they're supporting, or still have narrowed it down. And then I run into others who I'd say are kind of that mid-tier of involvement. And they come out to, they care about the issues. They're coming out to sign the abortion access petition, that ballot initiative, or for actually a local candidate. They want to get them on the ballot. And I'll run into them on things or doing training for the abortion access initiative. And they are asking me who they should support. Mm-hmm. And they say they haven't really researched. There's so many of them. And these are people that will be primary voters. They're that involved, but they're not maybe the ones that are doing something every day for Democratic politics. So it's interesting. So I was really curious if I'm going to find more of the latter group who is aware there's a large primary, a crowded field, but also hasn't chosen anyone yet? Or am I going to find people that are just, no, I have my person, I'm supporting them, I'm working for them, I'm giving them money? And I think we found more of the latter so far.
We're going to listen to some of what you heard in a moment. But as someone, again, who's a former nominee and former candidate, does it drive you crazy at all a little bit to say, oh my God, these are people who actually care and they don't even know who the candidates are?
It does. It does. I ran for this position a couple times because I want to see it flipped. And so it is hard to hear that. It is hard to know that we are, you know, approaching April here. And with summer in Arizona and people traveling, that means we're pretty much at the primary, you know. And so knowing that, it is frustrating to hear. I want to see people really start to align whoever they may choose behind a candidate. So whoever our nominee is, they have that momentum because it is that short general.
So one of the people you talked to who is especially enthusiastic about getting David Schweikert out of Congress doesn't even live in the district.
Because I'm looking to flip it so that we can maybe retake the House, that's important. But I don't like David Schweikert. You know, he's done some things that were corrupt, and he got caught at it, and nobody seemed to care. They, you know, elected him again. I don't like that. And then he does not represent his constituents. This area, especially the district one that he's in now, is really, you know, quite liberal. They're very accepting of LGBTQ. And, you know, they're just not nasty like he is.
Did that give you any sort of vibe or feeling as to whether this is an issues-driven campaign, whether it's picking the right candidate, or whether it's people just, at least this particular group of people or this particular person, ready to just get rid of the incumbent?
it was very interesting. So that was at actually a protest outside of Schweikert's office. And so I thought that that was fascinating when she said, I don't actually live in the district. And for me, surprising in the sense that this early we're having that kind of energy, but yet people aren't choosing a candidate, if that makes sense. So I think that's concerning to some degree, but it's still good. You know, I think people like that in the general, they want Schweikert out. They're willing to come outside of their area to work on that because they see the importance of us having that majority delegation and that majority in the House. So if, you know, those people are connected to a primary candidate, it's going to be easier to get them to transition into support in the general. But if not, then hopefully they're still going to volunteer in the general for whoever the nominee is. So it's a good thing, but also a curious thing, I think, for me.
Another voter you spoke with had a personal connection with one of the Democratic candidates, in part because he had been her state representative, but there were some other things involved as well. Before we hear from you, Anita, let's hear from that voter.
I really do support Amish Shah because he was my representative in the state legislature and has left to run for Schweikert's seat. He was an excellent representative for us. And this is kind of an aside, but all of the people that represent him that were knocking on doors when he was running were unfailingly pleasant and positive, and it was kind of a breath of fresh air. So he really is whom I'm supporting, but I have not really looked into all the other candidates, potential candidates, so I need to do that.
Yeah. How much does that have in that real personal touch? I mean, we don't know that it works with everything, but it helps, I would think, right?
It helps significantly. I think it makes a very big difference whether you're meeting them at a door, whether they come to a coffee with you, whether they just know you. We've talked before about kind of roots in the district, or they know somebody that knows you and has made that connection, or they went to the same school as you, even if you never met. I mean, those things really, to the average voter, make a big difference. You feel a connection. Connection equates in our minds and our hearts trust. And I believe that's truly what people are looking for. So I think if you can have that, and in this case, the, you know, the person is just knows this because this was her representative. You know, how much is that going to help? This candidate, Amish Shah, is also known for being at the doors and making those connections. And so I think all of that has to be considered, again, on top of, okay, endorsements, money, and everything else. Those connections matter.
And the more often you and I do this, the more we're going to talk about numbers. But with six candidates, even if we want to say, and I'm saying this, not you, even if there are four candidates with more name recognition, let's say, that still is a split. I mean, we have seen very crowded primaries. There could be someone with 28% win this primary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like I used to be very good at math, and right now I'm completely like, I can't do numbers in my head, but which is actually funny, play on Schweikert, because he thinks he's great at math too. But yes.
Everything's a math problem with him.
But yes. I can say for sure it will be, you know, one of those things where you don't need that high majority, right? We're not looking at, oh, it needs to be over 50%. It's going to be tight.
And those were just a few of the voters that Anita had a chance to talk to when she went out in the field. Anita, thank you very much for doing that. But in future editions of the Who's the One podcast, we will be hearing from other voters, other groups of voters, as we get closer and closer to that end of July primary here in Arizona. That sound could be a wake-up call to some, probably not those who are actually running for office or running a campaign, as Anita and I are sitting here mid to late March, so we're about four and a half months away from Arizona's official primary at the end of July. But there are a lot of things coming up, a lot of important deadlines. Anita, give us an idea. What are the important deadlines coming up, the important milestones? What do candidates and campaigns need to be focused on right now?
So they're up against that first quarter fundraising deadline. So which really, if you think about it, is the last big quarter to really show your numbers, because then the next one will be the end of June, which means those numbers come out in July, which, guess what? People will be voting already by right then in that primary with our mail ballots. So that is a big thing that they're up against. You know, I think you and I want to delve into in another episode about fundraising and how much this one will matter. You know, they've all been raising quite a bit of money up till this point. So while they do need to take that seriously, that deadline, other things that are coming up are petitions. Those petitions, I think the window closes April 8th. After that, there's going to likely be challenges in this race. I can't imagine that there won't be, which then ties up people's time and money as well. But really, to me, it's okay, you need to get ahead of the ground game. If you're not already there, this is the time. And kind of what we've been talking about is there's enough undecided voters, them knowing that suddenly you have more money, sorry, isn't going to make it. So you need to do both. That's kind of what's, this is crunch time. Really is crunch time.
So free advice from former nominee Anita Malik.
Free strategist. Yeah. I have been doing this for years. Free strategist.
Yep. Do you remember what you were doing 4 and 6 years ago as you were coming to the end of the first quarter there?
You know, we filed our petitions early. It was very important to me to get that out of the way and get it done well. And I know a couple of candidates in this race have either said they have enough or filed, you know, but not heard from all of them. So we were canvassing quite a bit. You know, part of that was understanding that people go out of town here very early. You hit May and it's suddenly people are gone. Also, it's hot. I wasn't going to ask our volunteer base to be out there. Some, of course, did. We still did. But really, you're going to get your most kind of bang for your buck there in terms of canvassing right now. This is the perfect weather, the perfect time. People are around now that spring break is over for most schools in the district. And so that's what we were doing. We were really hitting the ground.
So I'm seeing, we were at the Old Town Farmers Market in Scottsdale one of the Saturday mornings, and I saw an Andrew Horn table out there. Mm-hmm. He was the only one I saw for that. There were some other candidates running for other things. I think I may have seen a school board candidate, but he was the only one in the district. And that seemed like a good spot to be on a Saturday morning in March. Are there unconventional places that people go to either get signatures or raise awareness? Or are there places that just make natural sense? I mean, what for you, was it just sort of, let me hit as many places as I can, come on volunteers? Or was there a strategy behind, okay, where do we go to really raise our name recognition or get some signatures?
You know, I think farmers markets are great. Because people are there for a different purpose, but they're a little bit more laid back. They're taking their time, you know. But if you're thinking you're going to get, you know, it's great for these ballot initiatives to get signatures outside a concert or something like that because it's quick. But there's not a really, it's not a great place in big gatherings to interact with somebody. And I think it could be, you know, more that they're irritated with you. So what I always recommend candidates to do is, yes, hit the doors. You know, I've had candidates complain to me, well, I don't feel like people answer their doors anymore. Does that seem like a use of time? But you still got to be out there and coordinate that somehow. You know, maybe you're having a coffee in that same area. If the more people that can meet you, the candidate, yes, your volunteers, it's helpful. But if they meet you, the candidate, it makes a big difference. So it's really right now, it should be house parties, not angled to fundraising, but angled just to meet people. And they can be small, but they should be numerous. So really getting out there saying, I'm going to be in this area, we're doing a coffee or a house party. Or I'm going to be in this area, a coffee or a house party. And just trying to really touch base on all those places where particularly turnout, you know, in a primary is more significant, looking at those numbers.
How do you deal with folks who may be like, get the politician stuff out of my face. I don't want to deal with that. It seems like anecdotally, people are getting more and more hostile to this idea of either you're not in my camp, you are in my camp. If you are in my camp, I'll embrace you. Otherwise, I won't. Does it make it any more stressful to knock on doors, for example? I mean, is that one of those things you have to be conscious of too?
It does. And I've certainly heard it from volunteers. You know, when I ran in 2018, it was post-Trump. We were fired up. And there was some concern. But what we've seen in cycles since then, in terms of the alarm and the safety concerns that you have, is so much more significant. And so, you know, the good thing right now about knocking doors is these candidates need to be knocking dem doors. So should be friendly. They should also talk to independents. And I think that in those cases, you know, understanding that if you can really just make it an open conversation about who you are, really friendly, you know, sometimes people want to lead off with the issues too quickly. I tend to let the person that I'm talking to tell me what's their issue, what's their thing, and then get into the conversation so that there's no, you know, preconceived notions. But, you know, people are not trusting currently of politicians. The word politician doesn't have that same effect that it used to. And so I think, you know, people have to be careful, but should you not do it because of that? No, you just need to be strategic about it and go to those safe Dem doors, which will ultimately help us flip this district. Why? Because if we're not hitting them now, getting them on board now, they're not going to be there. They're going to vote in the general. Don't get me wrong, if they vote in the primary, but are they going to be there to really give you the momentum that we need to flip this district? And that's what we need. We need people to go above and beyond, work with their networks. You know, each voter you contact then becomes another 10 voters if you do it right.
Earlier in the podcast, I said we had heard from all of the volunteers and potential voters that Anita had spoken to, but there was one we had left in our back pocket just for a piece of fun.
Do you think if you make a decision before the primary, you'll spend some volunteer hours with one of them, or are you working on some other things?
Well, that's a good question. I did it for Anita Malik back in 2018.
Yes.
So I imagine I will do it again.
Yeah. Great. Thank you.
Well, Anita, unfortunately, the person we just heard from won't be able to work for you this time around, but I'm sure she'd be an eager person. But how important is it for this person in particular, or anybody else, to find another candidate to really get actively involved with?
It's a really big deal. You know, I think if there are somebody like that, she was one of those ones out protesting at Schweikert's office. She's involved. This is a race that matters to her. So I encourage her to find who that person is and, you know, hopefully connect. And that's the thing that I'm curious about. You know, I'm still kind of trying to do my research on is how strong are their volunteer organizations, each of these six candidates. And I don't mean how many people do they already have, but like, kind of that intake from a business perspective, that's how I look at it, building that community. Are they making it easy to, you know, get volunteers involved? So it'll be really interesting to see, but I hope she does, because maybe one day, Steve, she could work for me again, but not right now. But right now, you know, it's like, let's see which candidate has that stuff out there. You know, yard signs, I think yard signs should be coming up soon. So, you know, okay. Things like that.
Well, mm-hmm. I ask that you break that news, Anita, with us at some point.
On my own podcast.
Absolutely.
Should I do that?
Absolutely, if that happens. Okay. So
I could be a write-in candidate. I'm just saying, I could still do that.
Don't give people any ideas. But if you do have any ideas for
that's
us.
That's a mic drop, Steve.
Okay, yes. AZ01podcast@gmail.com. If you have any comments for Anita, you want to write her in, you want to tell us topics to cover. We've got a good list. We're excited about things, but we're always looking for your contribution. Let us know. Also, you can find the Who's the One podcast anywhere you find your podcast, whether it's Apple, whether it's Google, whether it's Spotify. Please listen, rate, and review.
And share. I'm Anita Malik.
And I'm Steve Goldstein. Music for this podcast provided by Epidemic Sound. Thanks for listening.